Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
I'm Athena Dixon, a co-host of the New Books and Poetry podcast via the New Books Network. Today, we're speaking with Shakira Kochi about her collection, Leave It Raw. Shakira Kochi's poetry translations have appeared in Babel magazine, and her poetry has been featured in several literary magazines and journals, including the New Ohio Review, Pilgrimage Press, HIV Here and Now, Transactions, Ducks, Pioneer Town, Permafrost Magazine, and Shark Reef. She was a featured reader in the Boundless Tales reading series, and she was a finalist in the Linda Flowers Literary Awards competition. Kochi holds a Bachelor of Arts from Sarah Lawrence College and a Master's in Public Administration from Pace University. Born in Geneva, New York in 1987, she grew up in Gainesville, Georgia, and later studied in Florence, Italy. She currently works at New York City as Assistant Director of Communications and Public Relations at New York's largest Medicaid special needs health plan, Amita Care. She lives with her husband, son, and two cats in Brooklyn. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Athena. Thanks so much for having me.
So I usually, when I talk to people, my first conversation with them starts with how they came to be writers in their respective genres. So asking a little bit about how you came to be a writer, how the journey brought you to this point. So if you would, could you share with the listeners a little bit of a brief history about your writing journey and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, I always loved reading at a very young age and kind of gravitated towards writing as a creative form of expression. That was just something I always enjoyed doing. I first kind of moved towards nonfiction writing in my like public school years and through high school and even my first bit in college. I went to Sarah Lawrence, and they're really well known for cultivating writing skills. Like almost all of their classes are a writing class and really focused on these big conference projects, long papers instead of exams. So I really loved research and writing, and I wanted to be a journalist for a while. And then kind of when I was choosing my career path, I also was very into activism and social justice issues. So I kind of wanted to use my writing as a activist tool. So I went more the communications, public relations route instead of journalism, even though it's really important work what journalists are doing now, especially. I just kind of felt like I had more freedom to delve into some of the issues that I really felt strongly about. So my professional work kind of went towards PR writing and helping not-for-profits do what they do. And it was kind of at that time that I always was reading and interested in poetry and fiction and all of that. But it was almost after college when I was my whole, 9-to-5 job was this nonfiction public relations writing that I really found myself drawn to poetry as a way of creative expression and reflection just on what was going on in my life and what I was, observing in the world around me.
So do you think that in some way, now that you kind of have like a writing life that exists professionally and one that exists creatively, if there is like a bridge or a balance between those two, do you see kind of any filtering between the two worlds?
Yeah, definitely. I I think it was someone who said, like, the key to being a great writer is being a sharp observer, like taking what you're seeing and picking things out and putting it on paper. A lot of my creative writing, not all of it, a lot of it's very personal, but it also does definitely bridge my professional world and just current events happening around me.
So as you're kind of approaching the page, I'm interested to know kind of how you find your footing in your work, because I imagine that I'm a person as well that has like a completely separate like writing life outside of the creative life. Mm-hmm. So how do you make that like shift? Are there any kind of things that bring you to the page, or how do you find the footing in your creative work when it's not like the whole of what, how you spend your writing time?
Mm-hmm. I've tried to, it's a lot of practice, like a healthy, it's one of my healthy practices that I try to do is just sit down, and I won't necessarily have a plan or a thought of what I want to write. I'd say that has almost very rarely happened, where I think of something that, or an idea that I really want to get down on paper, but just sitting myself down for however long, whenever I have time, and just seeing what comes to mind to start with. And it might be a really vivid image that I noticed, or something that happened to me. It could even be years ago, a memory that came up, or a piece of a conversation that I was in. And I'll just, you know, kind of start there, and then I'll go back and look at what, you know, what came out of my initial thoughts, and you know, develop it from there. And it's definitely a lot of editing and piecing together, but I have kind of like worked one poem at a time in the same way. Like, I'll have an idea or an image and just kind of keep developing that and editing things out, and then going back to it a long time after and seeing if there's anything else, you know, that comes to me that I think would add to the piece. So that's kind of been my process, is just to make sure I at least am thinking creatively and writing as much as I can.
So you mentioned a few moments ago about your writing being very personal. And I'm interested to know, was there a decision at any point that you consciously made to write poetry versus writing like memoir? Or was there kind of like just always a natural inkling for you to go down the road of poetry versus another genre?
Mm-hmm. I almost, through college, I actually explored more of the nonfiction. I took a couple of memoir writing classes. And then I'm not sure why I gravitated more towards poetry or made that shift. I also studied music during college. I play flute, so that's, you know, another kind of more creative, right? Even think of it as like a romantic outlet. So it was just something when I sat down to write, I just found myself writing poetry, or that I found myself going towards more of that, like as being a way to express myself creatively versus the more cookie cutter nonfiction or my marketing communications work that I was doing during the day. I kind of felt like that fulfilled my heavily nonfiction or prose work. But I kind of felt like my creative writing part wasn't really being fulfilled as much.
So I have to tell you, congratulations, that this is your actual debut collection, correct?
Yes.
So I'm interested to kind of, before we get into the specifics of the book, is to have a little bit of a conversation about the process of the book itself, because I think sometimes by the time people get to knowing about the book, like, it's the book only, and the process of the book may get lost in the shuffle. So could you give us a little bit of an idea of like what your process was for pulling together the collection, how long it took, and maybe what the catalyst was for you deciding to make a collection?
Yeah, so this was definitely a long time in the works. It goes back to some of my earliest writing, my earliest poems, which was, you know, shortly after college in my early 20s up through, now I'm in my early 30s. And so I went through my single life, you know, falling in love, and early pregnancy is what this book entails. So it's definitely like a kind of bookended period of my life. And I kind of, it's, the poems do kind of almost go in that order. The first poem happens to be one of the earlier ones I wrote. It's called Blue Ridge Mountain Runaway. And I was leaving home in Northeast Georgia and kind of finding my footing, in New York City, and also just reflecting on my my practice with music and how important that was to me. And then Cycle is the last poem in the book, and that I wrote that right around the time that I found out I was pregnant with my son. So it so I actually put together this. I've always had in mind that I wanted to publish a collection. I had been publishing individual poems before then. And then, it's just very hard to find, especially the editing space when you're doing the 9 to 5 every day. But when I was on maternity leave, I didn't have the work 9 to 5 every day. And it was definitely hard to think creatively with the lack of sleep. So I took the opportunity when the baby was napping to kind of sift through my work from the past 8 plus years and put together this collection and put it together in a, kind of a narrative arc that I think makes sense, can kind of trace the development of, it's mainly written in a woman's voice, and you can kind of trace her development throughout the collection. So I put it together during maternity leave, did some research around, where to submit, and that was my big project.
I'm glad you said that, because I think sometimes there's this idea that like a writer's life looks like a very specific thing. And often you don't hear people saying like, I wrote this book or compiled this book on breaks and lunches and when people were sleeping and, and having this very specific time that you have to work. So I'm glad to hear you say that. And I think also it's a testament of your talent, because the book itself is, it's actually really, really beautiful. So I wanted to ask you about a few specific elements about your book. And one of them is, I think that you have an amazing way of imbuing place and setting into your work. And so as I was reading, I was kind of like jotting down notes, and I thought that everything seemed to be steeped in this sense of longing or waiting for a storm, kind of like almost like the world's on the cusp of something. And I think that you accomplish that by like your imagery, that it's such a beautiful immersion for readers. And I wanted to know if you could speak a little bit about how you approach the page when it comes to crafting images, or how you determine the focal points of the individual pieces.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
No, that's true. The natural world, I think I've always like been fascinated with nature, and then living in and around New York City, I'm just always trying to be outside as much as possible and take walks. And I've just always wanted to get out. So a lot of what I might observe, or when I come and sit down and start my poem for the day, would start with one of those pieces of nature that I might have observed, like whether it's a trail of ants going around a trunk. And I kind of connected that to my pregnancy at the time, going around the trunk of a tree, or, other animals that you might see, or taking a walk and noting from like a few years ago, if I was, when I was in Italy, taking this like amazing walk around this cliff, which was where kind of my ancestors, had been, and smelling all of these wild flower smells and mixed with the sea. And then it's just very, very inspiring, and something I kind of often start with is observing the natural world. So yeah, I, I mean, that's absolutely a big part, part of my work and something I always find inspiration in. It's funny you say, actually, with the piece about things being on the cusp of a storm, I actually didn't include one poem in this collection. I think it was like too heavily focused on the storm, but it was kind of about, a woman sitting in the middle of the field as a hurricane was about to start. And I ended up not including it. I felt like it was too much focused on the storm and not other aspects of life. But it's definitely, again, like something I always feel strongly, like the forces of nature and how they impact us.
So your bio mentions that you were born in Geneva, New York, and currently live in Brooklyn, and you've also lived in Italy. And I was interested to know, do you find that those individual places, because I imagine that they are all markedly different when it comes to life and pace of living and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Did you find that there was any difference on kind of the way you approached writing or the things that you wrote when you were in those individual places? And did any of that really filter into the book itself?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I wrote most of this when I was living in New York City. So it was kind of maybe more pieced together of memories from other places. But you can definitely see through the collection, like my home in Georgia, we were in a house fire and luckily everyone was fine. But the home was a total loss. So the second poem of the book is called The Remains. And that kind of it has that house fire as kind of a backdrop to the poem, but it's also kind of about insecurity, feeling of loneliness, and possibly leaving home or wanting to leave. And then throughout the book too, I mean, Italy is such it's saturation of the senses in the best of ways, from obviously food and just the scenery is just amazing. And that's where my grandparents immigrated from. So I have some family there that I visited, and that's just kind of something that definitely filters through some of my work, just images from seeing the beauty of life. And then, yeah, a lot of the New York City images also do come through, and traveling, spending a lot of time on subways and buses and that type of thing, and being saturated with the senses in other ways of being kind of squeezed in with a lot of bodies and a lot of energy that way.
I'm glad that you brought up the idea of the subway, because that's what I was thinking when I was reading On a Familiar Ride. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like reading the book and balancing The Remains versus On a Familiar Ride. And so seeing both like the rural and the urban, mm-hmm. and even finding that in such like hustle and bustle and chaos of like a city, you can still find like this intimacy in your work. Mm-hmm. And so you also in your work have like these beautiful images, like at the end of the piece Prelude, you write, "To save it from a quiet crumble." And it kind of struck me that that was part of what anchored me into your book, is that there is such a softness woven through everything, but there's still very much the idea or the possibility of ruin or breaking. Mm-hmm. So even in a piece like Break from the Headlines, there is violence, mm-hmm. in that piece, but it's still handled with a very deft hand. So I wanted to know if you could speak a little bit about how you approach creating tension in your work. Is that intentional, or are there certain things that you focus on in order to create that tension without making it too heavy-handed?
Yeah. Current events, it's something I do. I read a lot of the news every day, and Break from the Headlines was kind of influenced by a lot of police violence that was happening. And coupled with that, though, I had kind of, I think, sat down when they were bringing down a line of trees in the neighborhood, and just the strength of those trees and the anger and sadness that you kind of feel in witnessing something like that. And just, you know, these uniformed people coming down and just kind of laying ruin to ruin what happened on the street. I could maybe read a piece of that, like when they're starting to cut down the trees. Since readying the blade, they struck quickly, bark splattered towards the others, leaning back with the weight of their bodies until metal hit the core. Without a pause, they cut in deeper. When louder than a gunshot, the first fell. The next one, younger, dropped faster. too many to count, splintered and collapsed down the pavement like thunder. Then a hush, save for the toddler, who no one heard had been wailing. It was then the mother realized a tear had broken from her lower lashes, running to rest on her cheek. She had been out there with the others in the cold and was too numb to notice. So, yeah, I mean, I guess just kind of coming, not necessarily to acceptance, but to a place of moving forward in life. I guess I kind of go back to a gentler side, or kind of, you know, thinking about how I'm going to move forward and my own son's future. I guess that's kind of where that approach might come from.
I think too that I would be interested in hearing from you. Like, you obviously do a job that is very kind of like non-poetic day to day. And then you have a very clear poetic life as well. So with everything that's kind of happening in the nation and the world at large right now, do you think that creative work such as poetry is giving people the more a better opportunity or a better entry into kind of like digesting everything that's going on? As maybe even a buffer to like kind of like the starkness of the violence and kind of like the ruin that's currently happening.
Mm-hmm. I certainly hope so. I hope, you know, more and more people read and are inspired to read. I know in the poetry community, there's more and more women's voices, more voices from people of color, which is so important compared to historically what the main voices have been. So I have a great hope that poetry and other forms of writing are going to steer, you know, people who are conscious thinkers towards a better world for sure. I think one of the things that inspired me to do what I do during the day, but also just also in my poetic work, because it's like you never know who's going to read what you are doing or who's going to be influenced by what I've done in my professional life. And it's like if one person can have a shift of consciousness or think of something differently for the better, then that kind of makes it all worth it. So, yeah.
I think too, in the collection, there is like this very clear sense of women not only being a healing force in the world, but also the strength and humanness of it as well. But I think that you also do an excellent job of layering in transgressions against women in pieces such as I've Left Time for Questions at the End and Departure, and that you handle those again in a way that's not sensational and it's not exploitive. And I wanted to know, how do you feel about giving voice to women's experiences through the collection and finding a way to own it versus it being just like a retelling?
I think it's, unfortunately, that kind of not direct violence, but like, as we've seen with the Me Too movement, just so many women, if not all women experience some form of violence towards themselves, just for the fact that they're women moving through life and especially navigating the professional world. So I think it was just kind of always been a backdrop and just kind of wanting to get the story, you know, a story out there. It's not, you know, necessarily all of what someone is, but it's important to talk about, and for people to recognize and see it as a bit of this person's journey. Whatever aggression might have happened is kind of, and not necessarily tried, but it just so happened that it worked itself into some of these pieces.
I like the idea of, there's a poem in the collection titled Venus Out on the Town. And I read it a couple of times. And the first time I read it, my first thought was, this is like a seduction. And then I went back and read it again. And I was like, it's a seduction, but I think it's a seduction on the man's part. And then I finally settled on the idea that it was the speaker of that poem was both casting a spell and being under a spell at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it created an interesting power dynamic to see womanhood operating within the roles expected of it, but also finding power within that structure, which how the speaker at the end is like wholly paying attention to something completely different. Mm-hmm. So do you think that, especially in this day and age with the Me Too movement, with writers of color and other marginalized people having a bigger voice, that art and the people who create the art are now not necessarily trying to dismantle the structures that have always been placed upon them, but they're trying to find ways to implode them from the inside, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, work from the inside. Yeah, it's definitely what some people choose to do, for sure. It's one strategy. It's kind of like, it's like being a sound in the town is kind of structured as a conversation between two people, but it's obvious that it's from the woman's perspective and just kind of people think talking past each other, and you know, he's obviously not listening to her, and she's using, you know, her power to have whatever amusement, or at least some drinks for the evening. But yeah, there's a certain thing of like objectifying each other almost, and but using that to like whatever it is to get through the night, maybe, or whatever it could be. Yeah, the poem starts out with, "Yes, you may buy me a drink. It's been a long week for me too. At work trading, you said, no, you haven't had much experience in social enterprise. And isn't it great we live in a country where you and your partners can pull such fine bootstraps? Yet one of the brightest stars in the night. Yes, I've been told I have a nice smile, among other things." So yeah, it kind of goes in that a little sarcastically, and she's obviously thinking in her own mind a bit about where she wants to go. And then she, you know, gets up at the end of the poem after having her fill of probably free drinks and goes after another guy. So yeah, so that was it was a more fun kind of poem to write, and a little bit different of format from the others in this collection. So I'm happy you liked it.
I think too, in addition to that poem, there are also other elements of like light in the book, because I know we've like gone into some very kind of heavy topics, but there's like a piece that's very playful and I found seductive, a piece like Our Song, mm-hmm. which I think it spotlights emotion without being like saccharine sweet. It showcases kind of like these like minute moments of life that are sometimes the most important. So I wanted to know kind of like how you decided to include elements of relationships and by extension motherhood into the collection.
Yeah, Our Song actually came out of me thinking about my work with people living with HIV and the HIV epidemic's history. So like a very heavy subject, but just, I mean, so many in that community, or, you know, the LGBT community, and you know, people have seen Pose or one of those shows. Like, it's just a very like uplifting, or a lot of it, as with anything, just like a very uplifting, like light community, love dancing and going out and, you know, seeing things in the city, seeing life and connecting with people. So I think that's a big part of it, is like the human connection. That might be why I think the idea of motherhood and starting to be a new mother is something that filtered through a lot of my piece, because that's such a strong human connection and comes with such, you know, positive energy and just approaches whatever horror might be in the world around you with love. So yeah.
I also wanted to ask you about the piece Broadcasting the Search for the Missing, because it was a departure from the form in the other portions of the book. Mm-hmm. And can you speak a little bit about how that poem came to be and kind of why the form was necessary for its content?
Yeah, I think I had done a bit of traveling recently, so it kind of takes place partially in an airport and someone going on a plane. There was a news report of a missing person, and then also there's just this amazing idea, or this amazing sport, I guess you call it, of free diving, where people go to these amazing locations and they just dive sometimes with weights or sometimes without any, just as far down as they can go, like hundreds of feet, without any scuba gear or anything, and then go back up, and obviously very dangerous. So so it's kind of that feeling of falling that gave me the end of travel and air travel, water travel, what the human body can or can't do, and what the limitations might be. So that made me kind of experiment with the form of the poem and kind of give hopefully give the reader a sense of that uncertainty, loneliness, feeling of being midair or in the middle of water above you and beneath you.
So I have a couple of more questions for you. Is there a particular poem in the collection that you hold close to your heart? And if so, why is that?
They're all very close to me. I think I've spent a long time on each of these poems, like kind of, yeah, again, like picking an image or something that I've started each poem with and just worked at it. The last poem in the book, Cycle, I think is very close to me, but that could be because of the point I'm at now with a 1.5-year-old son, and I wrote it, you know, shortly before my or during my pregnancy. So, and it's about, you know, about motherhood and steps to, you know, just thinking forward and backward to you know, great women figures in my own life who've influenced me. So that's I think the one that sticks out to me as something that's very close to my heart right now.
And are you currently working on any new projects, or do you have anything in the works that you want our listeners to know about?
Yeah, well, I'm always writing, so hopefully stay tuned for some more poems that I'll be releasing on in different literary magazines. But this was a big collection that I'm really proud of, and can find the book on Finishing Line Press's website or Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And then I'm very, again, active in the not-for-profit and access to healthcare scene. So I hope everyone stays tuned with getting out to vote, I guess would be the other big takeaway. Yeah.
And can they find you on social media?
Yeah, they can connect with me on Facebook. And my email is Shakira@ShakiraCroce.com.
And my final question, what are you currently reading?
That's a good one. I would have to say, number one, the New York Times. That would be like an everyday thing. And obviously a lot of kids' books. otherwise, I've kind of been revisiting Alda Marini. She's an Italian poet, and I've worked on translating a couple of her poems. But her work is really amazing and done in Italian. And it's just an interesting while my son is developing language and learning language to go back to, because I learned Italian, but I'm not 100% fluent, but kind of like different ways of framing words and how that might trigger different things in your mind is always, always really interesting. So yeah, I'm reading some of her poems.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
I'm Athena Dixon, a co-host of the New Books in Poetry via the New Books Network. Thank you.